Here. I was hoping or maybe thinking we can talk a little bit longer so I actually wouldn't have to get up over here and make some things up as I go along. But I always like to start off with a story. This is a story I've told some of you this year. A story some of you might have heard in the past, but it's a very worthwhile story. The story I'm told for those of you that are going to law school that they teach in a class called Coaching Your Client. And the story is about a certain very, very wealthy man in America, a millionaire who is a politician, who has actually had a future to be run for president of the United States of America. And there was an unfortunate circumstance involving a 17-year-old Mexican girl, and this man was put on trial for murder. It was a big story. It's a true story, by the way. It's a very, very big story. Headlines, all the news. And this politician goes and he hires the best lawyer, a guy who's never lost a case, pays him $5 million in advance. I think it's called the retainer. I thought it was like the mouth thingy, but, you know, gives him $5 million in advance. And going against him to defend this girl's family is a little schnitzel, you know, just out of law school, the assistant DA. He's never, you know, done anything in his life. And everybody is very, very confident, you know, going in, this is going to be a very open shot. This little DA, assistant DA, has no chance against hotshot lawyer. And the first day, it's a 5-day court case. The first day, they come in, and this assistant DA calls his star witness, you know, Mrs. Schwartz. She's 87 years old. And she, you know, according to her testimony, at 3 a.m. in the morning, heard screams, heard a gunshot, and saw this politician leaving in her building that area. And, okay, cross-examines her very nice, and they call up Mr. $5 million hotshot lawyer. And he comes up to Mrs. Schwartz and says, "Hey, what type of watch do you have?" And she says, "I have a Timex." "Where'd you buy it? How long have you had it? When's the last time you checked the time? When's the last time you changed the battery?" And he goes on and on, cross-examining the Timex instead of the witness. And people think, like, this guy has lost it. And throughout the entire week, this hotshot lawyer has done a very, very poor job presenting, you know, and defending his client, the politician. And it comes time for the last day. I'm kind of sorry, I could have run a little longer, we're short on time. And it's the last day already. The jury, six men, six women, at this point, you know, they're very clear that they're gonna go in, quick verdict for guilty. But the judge, as the last thing, calls up each lawyer to give, like, their summation, right? Is that the word for it? I think. My English isn't great. And so this little schnitzel's already wearing a $5,000 Armani suit because he knows he just took down the greatest lawyer of all time. All doors are open for him. And he comes in front of the jury and says, "My dear jury, you know, a life. What's the value of a life? It's a life for a life. This guy murdered my client, has to be in an electric chair." Done, tear-jerking speech, sababa. The judge then calls up the hotshot lawyer, and he comes up and he turns to the jury and says, "Guys, I know you think I've lost it, and that I did a very poor job defending my client. But I need to tell you something. See, a week ago, I got a call from this girl that you so-called claim my client murdered, and she's actually by her grandmother in Mexico. And it's 2 o'clock right now, and at 3 o'clock, she's gonna be walking into the courtroom. So I felt absolutely no reason to defend my client for murder when she's walking in. It was sort of pointless, right? So it's 2 o'clock, she'll be here in an hour, she's gonna be walking through that door." Okay, wow, place crazy, you know? The jurors, who the whole week have already been ready to say guilty, they start feeling terrible about themselves. How could they jump to conclusions so quickly? The judge, the press, everybody, it's nuts. 2:15, 2:30, 2:45, all right? 2 minutes to three, everybody's looking at the door waiting. 3 o'clock comes, 3:15, 3:30, 3:45. Everybody's like, it's sweating already, what's going on? The judge says to the Mr. Hotshot lawyer, "Listen, buddy, either produce the girl or I'm gonna throw you in court, in prison for contempt, you know? Summation." So he gets back up and he turns to the jury and he says, "You've all been well coached and well versed in American law. And you know that in order to condemn somebody to the death sentence, they have to be guilty beyond any reasonable doubt. But for the last 45 minutes, you, the jury, all of you in the courtroom, you, Mr. Judge, have all been looking at that door, waiting for that girl to walk in. And therefore, you all have doubt. And therefore, I say it's a mistrial completely, and you cannot condemn my client to death. Because you all had doubt. You all looked at the door." Place is in an uproar. Wow, what an unbelievable defense. Unbelievable defense. And the jury leaves, and as you know, they figured probably very, very quickly, a minute later, the jury comes back in with their verdict. And the judge says, what's the verdict? Everybody's assuming, you know, guy's going to be innocent. And they say, we find him guilty. Place is in pandemonium. Everybody's going crazy. So the judge bangs his hammer, his gavel on the thing, and says, order in court. You can't make a mockery of the court. You all know the law, beyond reasonable doubt. We all had doubt. So one of the young people on the jury gets up and says, Your Honor, let me explain. It's true. For that hour, everybody in the courtroom was looking at that door waiting for her to come in. But I wasn't. I was looking at one person, and that was the defendant. And throughout that hour, he never looked at the door because he knew that he murdered her and she really wasn't coming in. And therefore, we find him guilty. So they teach you this in law school, supposedly, that if you're going to try to pull such a shtick, you should warn your client to look at the door. Okay? Now, why do I tell you this story? First, I think it's just a very cool story. But at the end of this week's Parsha, we're introduced, once again, to Amalek. And we know that Amalek traveled a very great distance after Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim with one purpose in mind, right? Not caring about himself at all. He had one person, one purpose. Rashi quotes, and we all know this, gives a mashal of a burning bathtub filled with boiling water that Amalek wanted to jump into that, even though he's going to get burnt, but just to try to cool us off. We all know that when we're on fire, that term, we're on fire, or that girl is on fire, I don't know what that means, right? But in a basketball game, when you're on fire, you're draining every single shot, right? And when the guy's on fire, you keep on feeding him the ball, right? It doesn't make a difference where he's taking his shots from. They just keep on dropping. But when you're cooled off, oh boy. You miss that shot, you miss your next shot, you start getting in your head, you start questioning yourself. When you have doubt, when you're cooled off, you cannot be productive because you don't believe in yourself. When you're on fire, everything is going amazing. And we know the famous gematria that Amalek in gematria is 240, which is the word suffig. And that's what Amalek tries to do. And there's always an Amalek. There's an Amalek right now that always tries to put doubt in our minds to tell us, you're probably not going to be able to do what you want to do. When we talk about changing, Amalek will tell us you probably can't change. When we want to sit down and try to learn, I'm always like, come on, who are you kidding? You? Really? Come on. You're going to be in yeshiva for a year, then it's going to blow off after that anyway. What's the point? Amalek constantly puts these types of thoughts in our mind. And when we begin to question ourselves, then we really do stop trying. Now, it's very interesting, by the way, take it a step further, that if we take the word Yisrael, right, B'nai Yisrael, Yisrael, and you take the fire out of Yisrael, you take the Ish, the letters Aleph and Shin, out of the word Yisrael, so you're left with the letters Yud, Resh, Lamed, which in Gematria is 240, which is Safek, which is Amalek. Because that's what Amalek's trying to do. Trying to take the Ish, the Aleph and the Shin, the fire, out of us. And the Yitzhar Hara really has two tactics, two approaches on how to do this. The first is he tries to remind us about our past track record. Let's say a guy comes and he decides, you know, I want to go and I'm going to daven with the minyan every single morning. So the Yitzhar Hara says, come on, buddy. Every single morning? Look at yourself. You know, look at your year in Israel, look in high school, look before. You're not going to be able to do it, right? A guy decides, oh, I want to stop, you know, going to certain places. Oh, come on, you were just there last night. Who are you kidding? You think you're such a big tzaddik? You think you can do that? Guy's like, I'm going to start walking around, you know, I'm going to do mishnayos every single day. I'm going to start walking around with the sefer and learning every single day. You? Really? Come on. You know what type of guy you are. You know what you were thinking about last night. You know what you were doing. You spent 17 3 hours on your phone yesterday, right? You really think a guy like you can go and make moves like that? But if you're like, you know, I can do it. So then the Yitzhar Hara moves on to tactic number two and says, dude, you're 18 years old. You're 20 years old. You really think you could take this on for the next 100 years? You really think you could go every day for the next 100 years and daven with the minyan? You really think you could go the next 100 years and not go to those type of places? You're going to college soon, right? There are going to be so many temptations out there. You really think you're going to be able to learn every single day for the next 100 years? So he has two tactics, right? Tries to remind us of our past, and he tries to show us we won't be able to keep it going in the future. And this is really what we say in davening, V'haser Satan milfaneinu u'me'achoreinu. To remove the Satan from before us, right? From showing us about our future, u'me'achoreinu, and from our past. But this is one of the major tactics of the Satan. Okay? He always wants you, and guys, we're always worried about our, who here isn't worried about their future? Right? Who here isn't worried about their future? We're all thinking, what are we going to do next year? How are we going to make a living? Right? Shiduchim, what type of girl are we going to marry? Our houses. We're always thinking about our future. And a lot of times, our past also plays into looking at our future. So what do? How do we fight back? There's a pasuk in Tehillim that David HaMelech writes, and he says, Hinei tefachos nesata yamayim. You have given my days into tefachos, tefachs. What is a tefach? You know, tefach is a fist. Why is David HaMelech comparing the days of our lives to a tefach, to a fist? So Rav Simcha Bunim gives the following shot. And he says, imagine you have this huge, long rope, and you're pulling the rope, right? So what do you have in your hand? All you have is that piece of rope, which is currently in that tefach, in your hand, in your fist. That which you've already pulled is behind you. That which you have yet to pull is still ahead of you. And what David HaMelech is saying, you want to know how to fight this Yetzer Hara? You want to know how to beat his tactics of the past and the future? The answer is, look at what you have in your hand right now at this moment. Your battle in life is one moment at a time. It's one day at a time. It's about right now. What are you going to do with the opportunity that you have now? How much you're going to learn next year? When next year comes to now, you'll have that battle. But right now, the question is, how much are you going to learn today? Are you going to hit minyan today? Are you not going to go to that place today? Are you going to learn today? Are you going to work on yourself today? That's the only battle that we have. What's already happened, I'll go even so far to say, Hashem doesn't care anymore about what happened yesterday. Hashem doesn't care about, did you do the mitzvah or did you do the aver? Your mitzvahs don't help Hashem, your averos don't hurt Hashem. They help you or they hurt you. But we've mentioned so many times, Hashem cares about the effort. So what happened yesterday, it's finished. What happened a moment ago is done. It's over. You can't change that. But what you have is the ability to change this moment right now. And it's a mindset that we have to take in. Stop worrying so much about, am I going to be able to, or what have I done? You have opportunity right now. And it really goes a step further than this. We say in davening, HaMechadesh v'tuvo b'chol yom tamed ma'asa bereishis. We know that Hashem is constantly renewing the world every single moment. It's not that Hashem created the world and just let it be. Every single moment Hashem's hashkacha is in the world, keeps everything running. And if Hashem for a moment were to just shut off his mindset from keeping the world running, everything would just cease. And the same is true in regards to us. Hashem constantly recreates us every morning. Elokai neshama shenasata b'tohorahi. Every single morning when we wake up, we're a new creation. We're a new being. It's one of the reasons why we wash our hands in the morning. And our job is to understand, if I'm a new person in a new world, then my track record doesn't exist. What happened yesterday has absolutely no connection to who I am today. If yesterday I wasn't able to do something, that doesn't mean that I can't do that thing today, because I'm a new person with new abilities. And even if the last 100 days I tried and it makes absolutely no difference. Every morning you start off and it's a new ballgame. You know, in the world that we live in, you could lose most of the games in your season and you win a couple, you still have a losing record. But by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it doesn't work like that. You could have lost a million times, but you win today, you're 1-0. You're a winner. Because that's what Hashem wants from you. And therefore, the two points. The first is know that you have this moment right now. And you also have to understand that this moment right now, this is the first time you as you are living in this moment. It's also one of the beautiful ideas. Guys ask, you know, how can I find more meaning in what I do? It seems like, oh, it's the same daf of Gemara today as it was yesterday. It's the same davening today as it was yesterday. Same Shabbos this week as it was last week. Same Yom Tov this time as it was last time. That's just, it's never the same. And if it appears the same, it means that you failed at that point. Because it's a new day and you're a new person with a new approach. And when you grow and you change and you move, it's never going to be the same. You could daven the same nusach every single day, never have the same davening twice in your entire life. That's one of the most beautiful things about Yiddishkeit and about the opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, is that everything is always new. Rav Pinkus points out, though, sometimes because we have a physical body, he gives a mashal if you're sitting on a train and the train's moving very, very fast, or on an airplane, let's say, right? And you look outside the window. So it doesn't look like anything's moving. It looks like you're seeing the same view all the time, the same scenery, and nothing's changing. But in reality, you know, you're moving 700 miles an hour, right? Obviously, you are looking at things differently because you're not in the same place. But sometimes we just feel that we're in the same place. And therefore, we have to try to understand, Lev Tahor Barali Lekim Baruch Nam Kham Hadesh Bekirbi. There's a new chiddush all the time. We're a new person, and we're never looking at things the same way. Just going to end with one last idea over here, which is a little bit of chizuk for even when we fail. Can't let an opportunity like this go by without talking about a woman who's a sota. All right, you all know that the parsha of a sota is a woman who unfortunately was doing certain things that weren't appropriate, and her husband specifically warned her not to go and seclude with a certain man. And yet she goes, and two witnesses see her seclude with a certain man. So her husband goes and takes her to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, and she has to drink waters, which God's name, get erased in. And we know that if, unfortunately, she did what she was suspected of, something not nice happens to her. But we know that if she did not do it, the Nixa, right, she's clean, then what happens? So Rabbi Akiva says she's able to have a child. So Rabbi Yishmael says, I don't get it. Any woman then who was unable to have children should just go, right, and go through the whole charade, make her husband suspect her of doing certain things, and then she'll come to the Beis HaMikdash, drink the water, and she'll be able to have kids. Which, by the way, the Gemara says that's one of the things that Chana did. Chana told Hashem, better give me a kid, because otherwise I'm going to go make my husband think that I'm a sota, and then you'll have to give it to me anyway. So Rabbi Yishmael says that's crazy. Rather, what it means is, if she gave birth in pain, so now she won't have pain. If she gave birth to only females, so now she'll have a male. But Mimanovshach, guys, there's a very, very simple question here. No matter how you look at this, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, she is being rewarded for doing a very, very bad thing. For although she may not have gone and done an unforgivable sin with this strange man, but she definitely went against her husband's wishes. Her husband said, I don't want you alone with that guy. I don't want you near that guy. She went. She secluded with the guy. Witnesses saw how long they were there for. So she didn't do the biggest of it, but she's dirt. This woman is dirt. Isn't it enough? She'll drink the water and she won't explode. Why does she have to get rewarded? And Rav Lopian says an unbelievable, unbelievable chiddush. He says, we see from here that this woman, she was totally consumed with her desire, with her passion for this sin. With the man who's a lowlife, he knows that she's a married woman. And yet, with all that taiva and that passion and feeling that moment, to some level she held herself back. And she did not do as bad as an avira as she should have done. And in some level, in some way, she beat her Yetzirah. Because the Yetzer Hara wanted to get her to go 100%, and she held back. And Hashem does not hold back anyone's reward. And therefore, she goes through this very embarrassing process of being exposed in front of everybody and drinking the water, and that atones for her Avera. But the fact that she beat her Yetzer Hara on some level, for that she gets tremendous reward. And we find this again by Paro in this week's Parsha. Vayi b'shalach Paro. We're told that Paro walked the Jews out of Egypt. And the Medrash says that in the schus of that, Egyptians are allowed, after the third generation, to become part of Klal Yisrael. And again, the question is, Paro's a guy who was the worst type of person. He enslaved the Jews, made them do terrible things. He took baths in Jewish babies' blood. So he took a couple of steps when we were leaving, after he was totally beat, and Makas Bechoros, he was a Bechor as well. Obviously he let us go, right? What's the big deal? So he walked us out. The pshat is, we all know, if you're ever playing in a in a basketball game, and you were the underdog, and you lost, and you lost. So it's very easy to go over to the better team that you know is better and say, good game. But when you were the predicted champions, and you lose to this no-name team, to walk over to them and be like, yo, good, it's a very, very hard thing to do. Pharaoh should have just sat on his throne in his broken kingdom and said, Jews, leave. I don't want to see you anymore. But he walked us out. And in some level, he also overcame his Yetzer Hara. Because his Yetzer Hara was telling him, just sit where you are and tell him to go. But he went and he walked us out. And for that, he and all of his nation are forever written down in the Torah, but he b'shalach Pharaoh, and it gets put down over there. So therefore, we see a very, very important lesson here as well. That even if, unfortunately, you do stumble, and you did do an Avera, and you had an hour Seder, and you bottled for 15 minutes, but you didn't bottle for 16. You didn't bottle for 45. You learned. And you probably had a Yetzer Hara to bottle that whole time, and you overcame it. And you learned for 5 minutes, learned for 30 minutes. And you could have not shown up to Shacharis. You showed up, yeah, you got there late. Okay, but you got there. That's a win. That's a win. So don't let your averos hold you down. Hashem doesn't want your averos to hold you down. Because we have the opportunity to start over every single day and to really win. Because that's our job in this world. Everybody's looking for meaning in life. Why did Hashem put us here? So Baruch Hashem, I could say it. You have one reason. Beat your Yetzer Hara. We all have different Yetzer Haras. You beat your Yetzer Hara by working on your Midos, by becoming the best person that you can be. And for every single one of that, that looks different. For some people, it might be a life in Kollel. For some people, it's a life learning Torah and supporting Torah. For other people, it's opening chesed organizations. Whatever it is, there's so many different ways to serve Hashem, but we all have one common goal. And that is, overcome our own individual Yetzer Hara. That's why we're in this world, and that's our job. So Mirta Hashem, if we take these two lessons to understand that all we have right now is the moment in front of us. What's happened in the past has already happened, and what's yet to come is yet to come. All we have is right now. And to remember, every day and every minute, it's a fresh start. It's a new beginning. And even if I lose, I can win even in a loss. And Mirta Hashem, Hashem will give us that koach to really overcome our Yetzer Hara to become the people that we're meant to be. Have a great week.
Hey, Shkaya.